the most important because it's about the ecological origins of the AIDS pandemic. It's about the where, when, and how of AIDS emerging from Africa. And it tells a story very, very much different from what most of us have long thought we knew about the origins of the AIDS pandemic. Very different from the idea that it began in the 1980s with some promiscuous Canadian airline steward known as Patient Zero. What I tell is a very different story from that.
It goes all the way back to a single event back in about 1908 or so?
That's correct. We now know from very good evidence published in the last 10 years, most of it, genetic evidence, that the AIDS pandemic began with the spillover of a virus from a single chimpanzee into a single human in the southeastern corner of Cameroon, Central Africa, back around 1908, give or take a margin of error. And then it simmered in the African villages for decades before it finally got to the capital cities and then on to the rest of the world.
And we've talked about why it was the most important book you've written. Why the riskiest?
Well, I say the riskiest because I do something in this book that's a little unusual, at least for my nonfiction writing. I am very, very strict with facts, with quotes. I do not create composite characters. I do not invent quotes or extrapolate from what people might have said. In this book, however, there's a gap in what science can tell us as to how this virus spread in Central Africa. And so I create a narrative. I call it a fable, or the fable of the voyager. And I tell the reader very clearly, okay, this is hypothetical. This is the man who became infected from the chimpanzee. This is a man who became secondarily infected. He traveled down the rivers. And I tell a story to fill in the gaps between what science knows during the early phase and during the later phase, to create a hypothetical of what is called the cut hunter hypothesis, that the epidemic began when a single hunter killed and butchered a chimpanzee and got blood-to-blood contact. That's what the scientists talk about, the cut hunter hypothesis. I turn the cut hunter hypothesis into a narrative. And it's risky in the sense that I'm combining a bit of hypothetical fiction writing with a very, very strictly nonfiction book. I hope it's successful because I tell the reader very clearly when I'm doing this and what is hypothetical.
What prompted you to do that for this particular story?
Well, a couple of things. The first is that there was this gap. There's this genetic evidence that tells us the where, southeastern Cameroon, and the when, 1908. This comes from work that's been published in journals like Nature and Science over the last 12 years by a couple of different teams of scientists. But after you have that location in space and time, then there is a gap in the evidence until we start to have people turning up HIV positive in 1959 and 1960 in the capital of the Congo. In between those years, there's this gap. So I wanted to fill that gap with well-informed, though hypothetical, storytelling. And that was one of the reasons that it is. The other reason is because I started my career as a fiction writer myself. I've published 4 books of fiction long ago, but I'm familiar with writing dialogue. I'm familiar with the tools of the fiction writer. And while playing by the rules and being very honest with the reader, I use some of those tools to fill that gap.
Well, that's The Chimp and the River, one of the short books that you've drawn from Spillover. The other is Ebola, that was released last year, I believe. And one of the things to me that's so fascinating about Ebola is you have a virus that's so deadly, David, but the outbreaks of it are so sporadic.
That's right. It's very mysterious. It emerges from the forest, and it terrifies people and makes people sick and kills people, and then it disappears, sometimes for 5 years at a time. It has to live somewhere. It has to live within a living creature because viruses can only replicate inside living creatures. So there's a category the scientists call the reservoir host. That's the host in which a virus lives when it's one of these viruses that I'm talking about, zoonotic viruses, viruses that pass from non-human animals into humans. We know that there must be a non-human animal host for Ebola because it is so violent when it's in humans and then it disappears. So it can't be simmering in the human population or we'd know about it. Therefore, it has to be living in an animal. What animal? We don't know. Something that lives within the Central African forest that serves as the reservoir host for Ebola in between human outbreaks. A creature in which Ebola lives quietly, inconspicuously, without causing great death in that creature. And that reservoir host is still unidentified, still undiscovered.
What was it about these types of viruses, Ebola, HIV, that really drew you into this line of research that led to spillover?
Well, the whole interest began when I was making an expedition for National Geographic across Central Africa, and we went through Ebola territory, and I learned a lot about Ebola, both the ecological and the human side at that point. I got interested in this category of diseases, diseases that pass from non-human animals into humans, because I've written in the past about ecology and evolutionary biology, and there's a lot of ecology, there's a lot of evolution involved in this subject, including the fact that it reminds us of what I call the great Darwinian truth, the darkest of Charles Darwin's truths, and that is that we humans are animals ourselves. We're not separate from nature. We're not above nature. We're part of the natural world. We are a species of animals, and these diseases that pass from non-human animals into humans remind us of that continuity, remind us of that connectedness. And therefore, it seemed to me, in addition to the fact that it's really dramatic and in some ways gruesome, in some ways mysterious, filled with mystery stories, it seemed to me a worthy subject for a book.
There have been outbreaks recently here in the United States. We've heard of, an outbreak of measles not too long ago in California. Right now, as we speak, there's been a mumps outbreak here on the University of Illinois campus. Is there anything from your research on these deadly viruses, HIV and Ebola, that you think could be applied to some of these other outbreaks that we're starting to see again here in the United States?
Well, those that you mention fall into a different category, and it's very interesting that they do. Measles is not a virus that comes to us from non-human creatures. It is a virus that lives entirely in human populations, but it circulates around the world, so it can disappear from one area for a long period of time, and then, in some cases, people let their guard down and they stop vaccinating their children against measles, and then it can circle back from the other side of the world and start hitting people, and in the absence of vaccination, measles can really be a very serious disease. So it's a reminder of that. It's also a reminder of the fact that everything comes from somewhere. And even the diseases such as measles, such as smallpox when it was still a problem, that affected only humans, they had to have come from somewhere because we humans are a relatively young species, and their ultimate origins are in related forms that did come to us from animals. Even measles, even smallpox, have evolved to be purely human infecting viruses from forms of virus that at one point were coming to us from animals, from non-human animals.
What's the big message you want to convey to students when you talk to them on Monday?
Well, it's probably what I just described, Brian. It's the fact that we face a drumbeat of these new emerging diseases that are coming to us from animals. The most recent and dramatic is Ebola. We've talked about AIDS. There's a whole list of others. The influenzas come from animals. And more and more of these are emerging from diverse ecosystems. Why? The tropical forests and other places, because people are going in there and disrupting those ecosystems, cutting down trees, killing the animals and eating them, in some cases exporting them around the world. And we're exposing ourselves to those new viruses. And we live in now a globalized world so that new viruses can travel around the world at the speed of an airplane the way SARS did, the SARS virus in 2003. So we need to be very alert. We need to be very vigilant. We need to be educated about these new things, these emerging viruses that are coming at us, because none of us lives more than about 15 hours away by airplane from the tropical forests and the latest dangerous exotic viruses that are going to be coming out of those places.